Hey there, it's Mike Trimb, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Okay, welcome to White Line Fever. My name is Steve Mascot. This is the start of the show, but our guest you heard on last week's show, I don't know if I did a show a week, but the last show, and it's Ian Moss. Welcome back, Ian.
Steve, how are you?
Good, good, good. Now, tell me about, you know, you just did a Barking Spiders show. Well, that must have been awesome. I'm sure the merch went crazy. Did you do Barking Spiders merch? I just wonder, when the band gets back together, is it actually Jim, Don, you know, you pick up the phone? Or is it like lawyers and management, you know, when you get an offer? Like, is it still like a personal thing, or has it become kind of a business thing, you know?
Possibly more business. It's definitely, you know, for the past nearly 10 years now, we've had great management through John Watson and John O'Donnell in 11 management, they're called. And they've just got great ears and eyes for the things to go for. So we pretty much let them drive it and come up with suggestions. And more often than not, everyone's it's work. They've got the timing right. Sort of, you know, we're doing Cold Chisel, and then there's time for Barnes to do his, you know, he's been promoting his books. Don's released an album. I've been working hard on an album, so it's all. Just seems to be panning out, rolling out nicely, and Cold Chisel is still, you know, we've still got some more business to do.
Now, I've got the glasses on now, it means I'm about to ask the hard questions I prepared earlier. I wanted to ask you about Petrolhead, the last album of last studio album of all new material. How do you look back on that album? It was kind of like, it kind of tapped into, I guess, the hard rock that was prominent at the time, and the whole Chisel thing, and the stuff now is the new album's more bluesy and reflective and stuff like that. How do you look back on Petrolhead?
It was interesting. Don Walker produced it, and he was definitely keen to lean on keep a bluesy hard rock edge to it, but lean on more, I don't know, sort of that darker left scene by using writers like Ian Ryland and I forgot the other guy's name.
That's where I'm supposed to know.
I had a punk. Yeah, look, some great songs there, great fun. Very happy with that. It's just quite a contrast to Matchbook and Worlds, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the new album, which is self-titled, it's gone back more towards the Matchbook, but the difference is this time I've written the lion's share of the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel a lot more of a connect. Even there's a great variety of songs on the new album. I do feel a strong connect, mainly because it's come, because nearly every song has come from me.
Mm-hmm. It's
very different songs, but there's a connection between them all. I've had a few people now saying, you know, it sounds like you.
Mm-hmm.
Like for the first time, they said, the first time it sounded like you.
Mm-hmm. Creatively, what's it like to have an idea and it just sit there in your brain for 20 years? I mean, is it annoying? Is it like Chinese water torture? Is it drip, drip, drip? I mean, what's it like?
Yeah, you're right. There are a couple of songs. It's Not Over is one song on the album, which I'm very happy with the way it turned out. It's one of those things. It's that classic sort of all these great ideas lying, as I like to say, lying moribund, the wrong side of the the wrong side of the finishing line.
Yeah.
So, help me, come on, get me over the finish line. You have another go and can't get it there. You have another go, can't get it there. Oh, fuck. It's hard work. But, you know, it got to Nashville and we did all the writing. Except for that song actually was written by myself and Peter Walker. Yeah, you can get the right environment and stick at it. I guess you can get there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's have another song.
Hold On is another favourite song. This is quite in contrast to If Another Day. This is definitely more R&B soul, as in sort of Marvin Gaye, that kind of thing.
not see you looking that way, baby. I know what's on your mind. We haven't had enough of each other in such a long, long time. Sometimes the words are useless for what it is I'm trying to get across. Such and such for the right way, baby, but I'm always at a loss. So tell me, why does it have to be so hard to do the easiest things? And why, if we both just do our part, all we have to do is let go. All we have to do is hold on, hold on, hold on, babe. That's all right. We try and try and try again for the little things we feel. When all that really matters, darling, is love we know is real. I'm still learning to listen, oh, and I got a ways to go. But there's a lot more in the silence, darling, darling, that we both need to know. Tell me, why does it have to be so hard? Go. All we have to do is let go. All we have to do is hold on.
Welcome back to the program. Our next guest, sometimes people, we don't get them for, you know, we get caught up. We don't get them for a week, or we chase them around for a month or a year. This fella called early. How diligent is he? It's Bjorn from Night Flight Orchestra. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for joining us, Bjorn. Now, we're talking about the new album, Sometimes the World Ain't Enough. Mate, it's got a spacey theme in the artwork. The title sounds like a kind of James Bond film title. Where did that come from?
Well, there's no real connection to James Bond. It's basically connected to the previous album, Amber Galactic, since it was only released like a year ago. And if you see that cover, there's this girl in the cover, and she's sort of, you know, curious, trying to make up her mind. You know, she's curious about space, and she's holding that helmet. And on the new one, Sometimes the World Ain't Enough, she's sort of convinced. She made up her mind. And the helmet is on, the spacesuit is on, and she came to the conclusion, sometimes the world ain't enough, you know, right. So there's that connection. And basically what it is, we've taken a lot of sort of personal experiences and put them in a different setting. And for these two albums, it's space, you know, we've gone through a lot of weird stuff on the road, you know, being with Soilwork on the road for 20 years. And it's sort of hard to take those stories and put them into sort of metal lyrics. So I guess that's sort of liberating that we've taken all those stories and sort of made a soundtrack for it with the Night Flight Orchestra.
Right, and I did read in one of the bios that the stories, stuff about, like, I don't know, what was one of them, like waking up somewhere wearing only leather pants and all this sort of stuff. Like, are they all like, I mean, do you keep a diary? Or is it just stuff that you've shared and you want to recount and you want to sort of put a narrative around it, so it's not just like a tell-all book or an answer in an interview, you know? Like, are they all true? What is the number one sort of story that you wanted to tell, you know?
Well, I mean, most of them are true, you know, and I should have kept a diary during those years. I don't end up in weird situation as often anymore, probably because I cut down on the drinking that I have to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, but there's been some weird times. I mean, we ended up in the middle of the night at this woman's place in Montreal, and she somehow was like a dominatrix, and we didn't really count on that. And she opened this wall full of like whips and chains and this and that, and then she had sort of a subdued person who suddenly showed up and he's like, oh, let's get the hell out of here, you know, stuff like that, you know.
Like, we didn't count on it like you would count on someone being a dominatrix.
No, it's basically an after party, and we just tag along in a taxi, you know, and then, you know, that happened, and yeah. It was very surreal, the whole thing.
Do you think the space imagery is kind of tied up with it's tied up with prog, isn't it? It was like they're almost inseparable. Like they had that Space Rocks thing here in London a month ago, which a fella called Alex Millas, who I know, he ran it, and it's kind of like prog and space just go together. I know you don't think what you do is necessarily prog, but do people kind of prejudge it? Do they go, oh, there's an illustration of a woman in a spacesuit? It must be a prog album, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, some people sort of make that connection. You know, I guess I can't blame them. It goes together very well. But it's, yeah, I mean, I think this band is a little bit different. It's not, I mean, there are prog elements, you know, but it's a different take on it, I think. And it's very diverse, you know. I think we've hijacked an era and made it into our own, basically. And it's a very... I don't know. It's just very liberating, and there are no really boundaries to what we can do, which we sort of, you know, I guess we get high on that fact a little bit, you know? So, yeah. I mean, then we also have a guitarist who reads like 5 sci-fi books every week while he's drinking beer in the bathtub. So it might have to do with it as well.
How do you prepare for an album like this? Do you sit down and listen to, I don't know, Toto, or, you know, like, do you try to get yourself in the mood, or is it always there in the background somewhere?
It's always there. We don't even have to try. It's always there, and it's a constant thing. We never really leave the studio. We always keep on having recording sessions because we have two producers within the band with their own studios. So it's never, you know, a situation where we sit down and say like, okay guys, it's time to write a new album. It just keeps on going. I mean, I woke up to this Facebook post a couple of days ago that was posted 1 year ago by the Night Flight Orchestra saying, sorry, we couldn't keep out of the studio. our sincere apologies the night by the orchestra. So that was posted like a couple of days after I think Amber Galactic came out. So I think that says it all right there.
Yeah, it must be fun to have people an infrastructure around you where people believe in you to the extent that they can allow that to happen. You know, that you can be artistic like that and you can put food on the table at the same time. It's a blessing, really, isn't it, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is.
Let's have a song.
Yes. Which one should we pick? Let's pick Paralyzed.
I can't.
Bjorn from the Night Flight Orchestra, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever, third part of our interview with Phil Lewis of LA Guns. I want to thank him for his time. He did mention, listeners, you would have heard this in the previous episode, that he was even sacked from LA Guns once, in every other job he's ever had. Now, LA Guns, apparently, is it supposed to be some sort of record at 48 people? Is it now 48 with Johnny Monaco have been in the band?
I think so. There are somewhere near the 50 mark of people out there that can say at one time they were a member of LA Guns. Mm. That's pretty funny, if you ask me. That's what happens when there are two versions of the same band touring at the same time. It happens. It's just one of those things, and it's disastrous. It's terrible, terrible for fans. It's terrible for the two bands involved in it. But it was just the reality that we were dealt. It was something we just had to deal with professionally. Mm. And when you've got two bands, touring bands, going through various players. Frequently, as you do in the touring situation, it doesn't take long for the numbers to go up. To be fair, the people that I've played with, it's been about 10 people in my experience in my life in LA Guns. I've been around 10 different players, which isn't very much. It's certainly not much over a. Not much when you think it. I've been doing it since '87.
With
two versions, and there was versions. A version. There was a band when I wasn't in the band for 6 years. You know, I left. I left the music business. So they had all kinds of members. The guy, Ralph, from
Michael Starr. Yeah.
Steel Panther. He was the singer. He was a singer in LA Guns. He did a pretty good job. Jizzy Pearl, of course. Chuck, the bass player from Alice Cooper's band, was in LA Guns. Unfortunately, I wasn't in the band at that time. I love him. He's great. Mm. I would have loved to have been in a band with him. But you never know. This is LA Guns. You never know. He might be in it next week.
Because my follow-up question was going to be, it's obviously, you said it's not something you're necessarily proud of, then it must... It's a big call to then, have another lineup change, isn't it? When it's kind of something that you'd rather keep it as steady as possible now, you know.
Well, yeah, of course. There are situations, that beyond our control. You know, if something comes up and somebody can't stay and they've got to move on and you've got to replace them, it has to be fluid. Mm. I think, a lot of people are curious why we didn't get Nick and Kelly back in the reunion, the original bass player and guitar player. And the fact is that we asked them and they either didn't want to or they couldn't. Mm. Like, Nick couldn't because he's got like family, he's got a home business and everything. And Kelly didn't want to. Mm. So we just sort of forged ahead with the players that we had. Mm. And I think, it's pretty much accepted now that if it's me and Tracy playing together, then that's LA Guns. Mm. That's the nucleus and trust us, we'll get the best players available and it's going to sell great.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask just two more questions I was going to ask. One is about being an immigrant, and I know that a lot of interviews you've said, when you got to America, you felt like you're in the promised land, and you never want to come back. I'm in London at the moment. You never want to come back here, and I've just kind of moved here, and I guess I kind of feel the same way, And I just wonder why immigrants are so strident about not wanting to go back, and they tell themselves that. This is where I'm supposed to be. Why do you think?
Right.
Why do you think feel like that?
I can't speak for you, but you know, I died and went to heaven in 1987 when I got a call from Tracy to come out to Hollywood and sing in his band that was just about to blow up in the Hollywood scene. Mm. That's just a gift from God. Mm. And you know, London for me was miserable at that time. You know, it was bleak. You know, I've been playing with Bernie Torme, and we've been, you know, setting the clubs on fire. We've been doing great, but we couldn't get arrested. We couldn't get a record deal because the labels wanted, like, you know, cheesy, wholesome, bubblegum Duran Duran, you know, culture club kind of music, and they were scared to death of rock and roll. So, you know, I said I was playing with Bernie at the time, but I got fired from him. He fired me from his band. I can't even remember why, but, I mean, we were over it anyway, and so I was just spinning my wheels, and then, you know, when the phone rang and that opportunity opened up, that was amazing to come over and it was like, you know, like being a Roman god, you know, just walking around, you know, going into the cat house and just like hundreds of gorgeous girls and just like everyone listening to my favorite type of music, you know, everybody's really cool, everyone's real friendly, the weather was fantastic. It was just amazing. Mm. So, yeah, I was in no hurry to get back to rainy London. Mm. No offense. I wish you all the luck. you know, it was a wonderful city when I lived there. But, no, fuck that. I'm never going back.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Phil, I want to thank you for your time. I got to say, I mean, I can see why another interview 2 days ago might have gone over time because you're a great storyteller.
Yeah. But, yeah, I know. I go on a bit, but... Good. I'm glad we could sort that out.
Yeah, and there was a post a couple of weeks ago, I think, where you said, you don't like doing interviews, and you didn't understand why you were supposed to talk to Eddie Trunk, and so I expected you to be a bit reticent, but I guess that was because of what else was going on at the time.
Yeah, you know, my attitude is I don't really do interviews just for the sake of them, but, you know, we're coming over to Australia, and I'm excited about it, and I want as many people to know about it as possible, and if you want to ask me other questions while we're talking about that, then that's fine. But for the most part, no, I'm not one of these people that necessarily has to, you know, make sure that I'm in the public eye the whole time. And that's I'm kind of more private than that.
Yeah. Well, let's have a final song.
Oh, okay. We'll stick with the new record. This is my favorite. This one is called "The Flood." It's just the fall of the rain.
Been to hell and through, got the bones to show that you're strong, baby.
Follow us on Twitter, WLF Podcast, and like us on iTunes, all that sort of stuff. Special rugby league guest now. I've got Slade Griffin, who just made his debut for New Zealand yesterday here in Denver. I don't know where to start with the questions, mate. What an incredible experience.
Yeah, mate, awesome experience. You know, we're very disappointed about the result, but we're going to work on that. In terms of, yeah, coming to Denver is really a good trip. They looked after us. Treat us like royalty a little bit there. The staff done a tremendous job getting us prepared for that game, and the coaches. Yeah, it was a different ball game, all right, playing in the altitude and the conditions here. Yeah, we just shot ourselves in the foot a bit during that game. Made it very hard on ourselves, but yeah, it was just personally, it was an awesome experience coming into camp and, you know, being, rubbing shoulders with some of these players and. Yeah, what a buzz to pull in the black and white.
Tell us about, what about the week surprised you? Was there anything about the travel or the town or the game or the razzmatazz at the ground or the dressing room? Is there any, what were you most surprised about this week, you know?
No, it's kind of everything I expected. Yeah, training was really upbeat and obviously the skill level was high. It was just cool to come to, you know, the US. The city's very crazy, but yeah, it's just things like having to adjust your sleeping pattern and, yeah, getting over the jet lag and that. But like I said, they took very good care of us and, yeah.
Mate, Isaac Luke was, I suppose, was he your mentor in the lead-up to this game?
Yeah. Oh, he's a great player, isn't he? I guess I'm one of his apprentices now. He's had a lot of successful ones in McInnes, Curaçao and Damien Cook. So, yeah, I learned a few things off him and... It was, yeah, Madge kind of talked to me and said, you know, he's had these apprentices and he's a very good teacher, actually. He kind of just gives you little tips here and there, and yeah, he's a great leader as well.
Now, can you take us behind the scenes of when you got picked and when you got the phone call? And I guess there's still a bit of a transitional period where some blokes aren't here. They might come back into the team at the end of the year. So how much did you have to worry about the sort of politics of this match when you got picked? Or were you able to just forget about that and let other people take care of that, you know?
Yeah, I guess you just got to focus on playing good football for your club.
Mm-hmm.
Madge only told me about 2 weeks before that I was in contention, and yeah, the suspense has kind of killed me a little bit. But yeah, I just had to play well at club footy, and then, you know, things like this will look after itself. Madge gave us a little bit of a spray after the game and told us what we need to work on to be in the team at the end of the year. So yeah, you'll be seeing a lot of Kiwis playing well for their clubs, I think, if they want to earn their spot again.
Mate, there's some incredible skill in the team, isn't there? Some of the footy you played yesterday was dazzling, particularly in the first sort of 20 minutes.
Yeah, it was. Fortunately, we might have got a bit too excited. And then, yeah, just our discipline really hurt us in the end. You know, penalty count and errors really cost us. And playing in those kind of conditions, if you force yourself to do that much defence, it's going to hurt you, and it did. You know, so we'll learn from that.
You spent a week in camp with these fellas. Are you relishing the possibility of being maybe in England and France for 8 weeks in this environment?
Oh, yeah, that'd be amazing. you know, I was a bit disappointed with how the game went for me. Didn't get too much opportunities there. Just kind of defend the whole time. But, yeah, look, I'd love to get another opportunity there. And I know these opportunities don't get handed to you. It's one thing I've learned through my career, so I'll be playing my best and, you know, doing what Madge wants us to do, and to build a new culture and the type of player he wants to pull on the black and white.
Mate, it's really nice of you to talk to us the day after your test debut. Safe trip home and good luck.
Thank you very much.
I want my love. this is Mark Kendall from Great White. You're listening to White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. It's the third and final part of our interview with Joey Tempest from Europe. Want to thank him for joining us. Now, the band was on hiatus for a long time. I think it was more than a decade. I just wonder what your memories are of that period, what you did, whether it was a time of reflection for you, whether you look back on it fondly. How do you look back on that period?
Are you talking about the 80s, 90s?
Yeah, well, like before you reformed, you know, before the band reformed and came back with the album, you know?
The middle period when we didn't play together?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, looking back at that period, in 92, we did our last show in Portsmouth in England, and we had a meeting in the tour bus, and we actually said, let's take a break. I felt I wanted to do some solo stuff. I wanted to relearn, I wanted to dig a bit deeper and do some solo stuff. And the other guys said, some of them wanted to continue touring. They toured with Glenn Hughes and other bands. And John Norum moved to LA, of course. He was there doing albums. I took it as a time that was a good time for the band because we could dig a bit deeper. And I started listening to everything, like Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Randy Newman and Jackson Browne and Van Morrison. I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn about songwriting and lyrics as well, mainly lyrics. I wanted to be try to write more with more expression. And so that period was important. I did three solo albums. The other guys, they toured and wrote and worked with other artists. I think in a way now it was important. Mm. We've been back for 11 years now, and that period where we didn't play together, all that experience from those different days, we bring together to Europe now, and it becomes a bit deeper and more exciting, I think.
Have you ever played a show, or since the album came out, without playing the Final Countdown?
No, we haven't. I mean, maybe there's an acoustic show here and there where we've just done a few songs, but no, the funny thing, we were going to do it once, but we jinxed it, I think. We were going to Download, the biggest festival. We're going to the Download Festival in the UK, the biggest festival in the world, probably. At one of them, anyway. And we decided on the way that let's make something different this time. Let's not play the Final Countdown in the set. Can we imagine the Download audience? You know, it would be such a big boo and scream that we will get more publicity for that than anything. But the thing is, what happened was we didn't make it to the show. That year in particular, it was raining. People, we missed our slot with 5 minutes. A lot of other bands missed it too. They had to rearrange the whole festival. So we took it as a sign never to discuss leaving it out. We actually had done it on the tour bus there. We said, let's take it out.
That's a great story. Have you told that story before?
Yeah. We didn't make it to the show, and now we've decided not to do that again.
How would you describe, and you know, you can ask musicians this about any, you know, song that they're known for. Do you have a love-hate relationship with the song? Do you kind of hate it sometimes, or do you love it 100%? Are you in love with it all the time?
No, I mean, to be honest, we do love playing it live. People come together, whether it's a family festival or a heavy metal festival. It brings people together, and the band loves playing it live. It grooves a bit better. These days, it's a great track live. But we don't rehearse it. We don't listen to it at home. When we meet for a new rehearsal, we're going to meet to design the Australian set list now, tomorrow, and we won't rehearse, finally. We don't have to do that. It's in our bones.
Yeah.
But, we have a good relationship with it because we've always had a different relationship to it than anybody else. For us, it was an album track. It was a long track. It was almost 6 minutes. It was a song for the show. And it's always been like that for us. But as a lot of other people around the world see Final Countdown, they have grown up with it, or they've used it for certain things, or it's got its life of its own out there, that song. It's an amazing song. It's like a soundtrack. I still think melodically it's kind of in a minor key, but it's uplifting. So that thing in itself is kind of weird. The song about a spent Earth, leaving Earth, and looking for new frontiers. And people use it for weddings and all kinds of stuff. That's kind of strange, but it's out there, and it's got a grip of people, and you know, it's one of those songs.
One, it must be commercially valuable to you too. It must have been licensed hundreds of times. But what about, I believe one of the songs on the new album was written as a sequel. Is it Pictures? Or was it written as a sequel?
Yeah, Pictures, one of the more emotional songs on Walk the Earth. We were working on that. That's an old idea I had musically. And lyrically, in the studio, we were in Abbey Road in Studio 3, where Roger Waters wrote a lot of lyrics for Pink Floyd, and it was kind of inspirational, you know, just being there. But we thought, it would be nice to have a sequel. What happened to this guy that in 85, 86, that flew out in space, these guys, and where is he now, and what's going on with him? So the lyric was sort of loosely based on that idea, and whereas the music is there, the lyric was, yes, loosely based as a sequel to the Final Countdown lyric, yeah.
Before we finish, I'll ask you sort of a philosophical question. Do you think we will eventually have to leave because we're sort of destroying the Earth? Do you think that one day maybe that song will be played at a launch? Have you thought about it?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I do believe in hope, and I'm very positive. I think we will come around and save the planet as a race, but I think maybe some outside forces in a million years could take care of the job.
Yeah. Okay, I want to thank you for joining us, Joey. Our time is up. One more song.
All right. Yeah, well, what do you think? You can choose whatever you want.
Well, maybe. How about this? Why don't we play the Final Countdown and Pictures back to back? What do you think of that?
Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be a good idea.
blindly drifting. We get so lost in the past, letting go of the future, knowing yesterday won't last. So I'll cut the cable. The time is now. We made it safe so far. Escaping to the light of a moon. Amber shoots in stars. To where you are. Clock and star, they're ticking. Maybe the universe is numb. Venus shining, clear and pleasant, among the mother's many sons.
Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. But I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. And you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say, okay? Come on down and rock on.